This is episode number 889 with Formula One world champion Nico Rosberg.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
Dalai Lama said, with the realization of one's own potential and self-confidence in one's ability, one can build a better world. And my friend, it's not until we start to realize our confidence and our ability, that's when we start to overcome the anxiety, the stress, the worry, the doubt, the fears that hold us back. It's because in those actions and in those ways of being that hold us back, we're never able to realize who we can truly become. And I talk about this all the time. How do we build this self-confidence? How do we overcome this self-doubt? It's through doing hard things every single day. It's through mastering new skills. We're at the end of a year, end of a decade, and I'm already thinking about what's the challenging thing that I want to master next year. What's the new skill that I've always wanted to master that I haven't done yet? When I master something new, it builds this like belt around my waist of confidence. And every time I add a new tool to the belt, I just feel more bulletproof. So whatever it is that you're afraid of right now, go do that thing. Do it consistently until you've overcome it and then mastered it. And I'm so excited about this interview. We've got Nico Rosberg. If you don't know who he is, he's a former professional race driver who won the 2016 Formula One World Championship for the Mercedes team. And Nico started his Formula One career in 2006 and joined the Mercedes team in 2010, almost a decade ago. And with that team, he won 23 Grand Prix and 30 pole positions after finally beating his great rival, Lewis Hamilton, in 2016 at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. And Nico shocked the sporting world by retiring at age 30, having achieved everything after that world championship. And he's now reinvented himself as a startup investor in some cool companies and a new event that he hosts over in Europe as well. And he's got a new podcast called Beyond Victory. And he sits down with some of the world's most successful individuals to discover their secrets to success, what continues to drive them forward, and to hear a few exclusive stories in the process. And in this episode, we talk about Nico's upbringing and how his father and professional racing career has influenced how he is raising his own kids, how just having talent is not enough to be successful in sports, and there are many other social skills and intelligences that are required to be the best, how having a little arrogance can give you the competitive edge needed to win. This was fun to talk about. The power of simplifying your life and building barriers from distraction. I love how he creates these barriers in his life and simplifies to one focus, and how Nico manages his fear and self-doubt on and off the racetrack, because he talks openly about having this fear and insecurity even in the journey of becoming world champion. So I think that'll be really insightful for you.
We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone if you only had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life, so don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. We've got the legend Nico in the house. Good to see you, man.
Thank you for having me.
Super pumped. We're in Austin, Texas. We've been emailing back and forth for, what, 3-4 months now?
Yep.
Probably. And I didn't even know who you were until a few friends said, oh my gosh, this guy Nico talked about you. He talked about your book on his YouTube channel. And they freaked out. And I was like, okay, I got to learn more about this guy. They're huge fans of Formula One, which is only 3 people in America, right?
That sucks, yeah. Our sport is like one of the biggest globally.
Huge,
but
everywhere.
But everywhere except America.
And every time it's on, I'm always like, it's always late night. It's like a rerun or something when it's on here. But you guys are picking up here in the U.S., right?
Yes. I mean, they're going for it because for the sport to be successful globally, the U.S. is like such an important market. And we have U.S. owners now. So they're doing everything to try and grow the sport in America. So we've got this race here in Austin, Texas, which is where we are at the moment, sitting in this meeting room here. Uh-huh. So this is like one of the starts to try and go big in America.
Why is it important for it to be big here in America?
Because America is the global powerhouse for anything. Mm-hmm. And if you want to be big, whatever, if it's a company or a sport or whatever, you have to conquer America.
Yeah.
We know that and everybody knows that. So that's what it's trying to do. I think one of the most powerful ways would be to have an American driver.
That would be
the way to go.
So how do we do
how
that?
How are your skills?
I'm too big though,
come on,
right?
You can jump from one sport to the other easily.
I have jumped in many sports.
And be the best in any sport you go for.
So. I have jumped in many sports. But I'm a big guy. You're supposed to be smaller, right? You're supposed to be like compact and a certain size.
They've loosened up the rules now. When I was driving, which is 3 years ago, every gram of your body weight mattered. But now, because drivers went on hunger, like went so extreme on diets and went too light, and really it started to become a bit dangerous, they kind of set a driver limit minimum now. So even if you're a small guy, you have to put lead weights to your seat.
What?
To bring it up to your kind of weight.
Really?
Yeah. So you do have a chance.
Because I'm 225
That's
pounds.
Pushing it a little bit, maybe.
That's pushing it. So I got to drop about 40 pounds probably.
More or less, yeah.
Really. So now, is it true that there are 500 million fans worldwide? Is that what I heard?
Yeah. So globally, Formula One is top three sport together with after Olympics and soccer. It's the most
cricket,
viewed
right?
sport in the world in front of cricket.
In front of cricket.
Yeah, so it's absolutely massive.
Why is it not big here? Why is NASCAR massive here, but no one...
I have no idea. It used to be. Back in the 60s and 70s, it used to be very, very big. And I think many of the older listeners will remember those days with Ferrari racing back in those days.
Sure.
and all the legends of the time. And then somehow the sport lost the connection to the U.S. and now trying to build it up again.
Okay. Is that part of your mission?
I would like to support, yeah, if I can. Yeah. But it's not really part of my main mission because I have other... projects now.
Other visions. Yeah,
but even going back, so my father was a Formula One world champion himself, mm-hmm. and he won on the parking lot in Vegas.
That's really?
There used to be a Formula One race in the Caesars Hotel parking
no
lot.
No way.
And he won the world championship on that parking lot.
In Vegas.
Yeah, so back in those days, F1 was massive still.
Okay. Now, did your dad influence you in a big way, or were you also just a fan of Formula One without your dad being the world champ?
No, certainly my dad influenced me massively because as I was growing up, he was still racing, not in Formula One anymore, but in some touring cars like NASCARs.
Uh-huh.
And then growing up, watching your father do that, which is the racing, the adrenaline, the crowds going mad, the battles and everything. I mean, there was no other way than be inspired by that. And so from very small on, it just became my dream to become a racing driver myself and try and make that hobby into my job as well.
But weren't you also like world class in tennis and other sports as well?
Yeah, so my mom was pushing for tennis. My
really?
Dad was pushing for racing driving because my mom was dead scared about the racing driving because uh-huh. it's so dangerous. But then when I was 10, I mean, clearly I had a better chance in racing driving, and both were equally fun, and just went for the racing driving then, I think, which was quite a good choice.
Yeah. So I'm assuming most of my audience doesn't know who you are. I'm just going to let you know.
Yeah, that's why I know.
In the US.
Yep.
So give them some context about the process. For those who don't know, what's the process of actually becoming a professional Formula One driver? You started racing when you were 4 or 5 years old, go-karts, right? And how does the actual process go to get to where you were?
So everybody starts in go-karting. And
everybody.
I started, yeah, everybody.
What if I was a 20-year-old man and I was like, I want to get started in sport?
It's very, very rare. There's maybe one guy, and nowadays no one anymore.
But you're not go-karting at 20. You're starting with...
You're starting with the smaller Formula One cars.
You are, okay.
Junior Formula
okay.
One.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so you start in go-karting. And I started when I was 4, because as with tennis and golf, you have to start young, I think, to really take the most time to practice the skill. And then you start racing go-karts at the age of 10, and you start going for world championships at the age of 12, really go-karting world championships
for all
like around
juniors,
the world.
For like juniors,
yeah,
right?
12-year-olds, yeah. And it, at the time, that feels like the world the championship of the universe, like the most important thing
really?
In the world. Yeah. And of course, you got all the ice skating dads. I don't know if they're called like that in the US as well.
Sure.
But there's big fights. I mean, huge
between
fights.
Parents?
Yeah, cheating, fighting.
No way.
Even at such a young age. Because there's so much at stake, you know? So, and it's the same in every sport. It's just a bit of a crazy world, you know, how then the parents are kind of living their passion through their child and are forcing their child and pushing their child and things. So I saw a lot of that, which is horrible, which gave me a lot of life lessons as well for how I want to bring up my kids. Mm. I'm very, very sensitive to making sure that I don't impose things just because I desire them on my kids.
You're right. How do you do that as a parent?
It's so difficult because the simplest things. Why am I pushing my child to walk at the age of 8 months? Because I want to get people's recognition that my child is wild,
so
superhuman,
yeah.
And is the first child in the world to walk. And I catch myself doing that.
Wow.
And that's the same for every parent. And
first
it's just
one to
crazy.
Say words
it's crazy.
One, yeah.
It's completely crazy. And it's all because of our own need for recognition.
Wow.
And so that's just one example. And I'm because of these life lessons and also all the psychology and philosophy studies that I've been through, I kind of learned that awareness, to be aware of all these things and understand, and then I can react differently and more appropriately. So when I catch myself doing that, I put the handbrake on now.
Really?
Because I'm like, Nico, that's just wrong. It's just not good.
Well, I think there's a way of wanting to accelerate your kids' growth and give them the best tools to be successful, but also like remove your ego from being like, look at me, I'm the super dad, right?
You're very right. It's a very difficult balance
to
find.
It's very challenging.
You don't have kids yet, huh?
I don't, no.
So this is all in front of you.
I know. I'm always learning from like new parents of what to do.
You thought any of your self-development things were challenging?
This is the biggest school.
This is the biggest challenge and school in the whole world. The hardest thing to get through, the most wonderful thing to get through.
I can imagine.
But it's incredible. And I mean, it's almost impossible to do it well.
Yeah.
It's so difficult.
Now, do you feel like your dad gave you the tools, but also distanced his ego and his desires away from you of like, you need to do this? Or was he supportive in whatever dreams you had?
I'll just cover first. Well, maybe I'll go to that. So my dad, I think, found very good balance because he got exactly what you said. So he always showed that he expected me to do well in life and perform. He's a workaholic himself, like completely, like a madman in terms of work. Yeah. I mean, flat out. And so that's kind of his baseline.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so therefore he expected a lot of me as well as a kid, whether it's school or go-karting or everywhere. Which was not always easy to live up to that kind of expectation, because for him to be proud, it felt like I needed to do all those things to extreme levels of professionality and dedication, you know, so not always easy. But it really helped me, you know, push forward and grow my own like ambitions and determination. So it was a huge help. And then he was very, very smart, because once I got to F1, we had a conversation, and I told him as well that it just added a lot of pressure, his expectation on me. So open conversation.
How old were you?
20.
When you got there, gotcha.
Yeah.
Became
and
professional.
Then, yeah, professional at 20. Uh-huh. And then he was very smart. He completely pulled back, because he's done it all before in F1. So he knows everything. It would be so easy for him to just tell me how to do it. So, of course, he had the urge, you know, to teach me everything, show me everything, and help me all the way.
But it just
doesn't work like that, you know?
He didn't help you that much.
Well, because I can't even accept his help. It's just too hard, you know, to accept the opinion of the dad. And,
wow.
And as maybe many of the listeners will know how it is to follow the guidance from the parents. It's not always easy.
Right, right.
And I was a bit allergic to that as well.
So you were almost becoming rebellious, but then he said, oh, I'm witnessing this, let me pull back.
Not rebellious, it was just difficult because of the extra pressure, really, that it added. Just, I created myself because of wanting recognition as well from my parents, and in this case, from my dad.
So he was did he win the world championship once, or?
So I won the world championship. He did.
He won once. Yeah. Once. So you had this pressure of like, always being compared to your father, I'm assuming.
Also that, yes. Growing up, when the dad has achieved something big, of course, and especially if you go the same route, everybody from the early age of like 8 years old, all the time, every lap, every stopwatch taken is like, okay, is he now as good as his dad?
Oh my God.
Or is he useless?
Oh my gosh, man, that's a lot
and
of pressure.
It's all the way.
How do you overcome that mentally?
There's no magic ingredient. I mean, you would say, don't focus on results, focus on doing the best that you can be.
Process, yeah,
but
of course.
Damn, I mean, I know that, but it's just so
hard.
Difficult to implement.
So
even
hard.
Knowing that.
Yeah, with all the press and the media and everyone interviewing you constantly.
They don't care about results. They don't care at all about how well you did for yourself.
Yeah.
And reaching your best potential.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care at all. Or, you know, society doesn't care at all either.
Sure.
So that makes it so hard. Well, at the same time, though, it was also a huge benefit to be the son of a successful dad in the sport because, of course, then more sponsors are interested and will help you. And even F1 teams are more interested because you have a name. And then coming back to the process. So you start in go-karting until the age of 15. And then you do Formula 4, Formula 3, Formula 2, Formula 1.
Wow.
So that's the ladder. And you have to win everything to get to Formula 1. So Formula 1 is then the winners of all the age groups. They all end up there together. Then.
Wow. So a lot of these guys you were teenagers with.
A lot of them. A lot of them
you
I raced
grew up with.
Along the way. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And the biggest competitor for all the years of my life in racing was a certain Lewis Hamilton.
Uh-huh.
So
he's got a good
I think
first name.
More of your listeners will probably know him.
Yeah, of course.
In this moment now, although maybe some of you still don't because
they probably just know maybe because of social media, but not because of the sport.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. So Lewis Hamilton now has just won his sixth title here in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I'm a bit fast forwarding here because
sure,
it's going to happen on Sunday.
Yeah.
But this podcast is going to come out afterwards,
yeah.
So he'll have won his sixth title. And the greatest of all time has seven titles, which is Michael Schumacher in the Ferrari. And so next year, he's very likely to beat all those and become the greatest of all time that our sport has ever seen in 70 years of our sport.
Wow. Now, you used to be a Ferrari, right?
Me?
Yeah.
No, you see, that's where you didn't do your preparation well.
But originally, I thought you originally
that was with Williams. Williams, which is also a legendary Formula One team.
Okay. I thought you were riding Ferrari. Someone told me you rode Ferrari back in the day and then you switched.
Williams, which is just as Ferrari, one of the legendary teams.
Gotcha.
That's where I started out with, which is the team with which my dad also became world champion.
Okay.
And then from then...
You switched.
From then switched to Mercedes.
Now, is the car... How much does the car have to do with it and how much does the driver have to do with it?
This is a very common question and it's just difficult to answer, but the best example is... One of the greatest of our sport, who retired 2 years ago, was Fernando Alonso, a Spanish guy, also two-time world champion. And he was racing for McLaren in the last 3 years of his career. And he was always finishing 12th, 15th, 16th, although he was the best driver out there.
Really?
So the car has a huge part in it, because from the best car to the worst car, at the moment, there's 4 seconds per lap. But then from the best driver to the worst driver, there's about 5/10 per lap. And so the car has the big chunk. But then as a driver, you can still make a big difference because it's up to 5/10.
So why would you stay with McLaren? If you're the best driver, why don't you go with the best car?
There was, I think, about $40 million that paid for some of the miseries per year.
Okay, so an extra $40 million.
So there was $40 million reasons, I guess,
really?
Maybe.
Why? I mean...
That's a bit mean to say.
Also, the money.
It's also, of course, that sometimes you just can't choose because there's very limited availability. And in his case now, the top teams didn't want him anymore. And so there wasn't much choice. And McLaren is an awesome team.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was a bit of bad luck as well that it just didn't get it together and had such a bad car.
So if I'm the best driver in the world, I can't choose the best car.
No, because that's another point about sports in general, or life in general, that just being the best or having the greatest talent isn't enough. You need to have social skills. You need to be emotionally mm-hmm. intelligent. You need to work your way into the right places. You need to play the media game. Mm-hmm. You need to know how to be dedicated yourself and prepare the best possible way. So it's just talent is not enough. Everything else counts. And also then to have success in our sport, it's important that you maneuver yourself into the best car in the right moment.
Really?
Because there's some drivers who were seen as one of the greatest of all time who never even became world champion just because they never sat in the right car. But it's a part of it. So you can't really call them the best drivers of all time, because part of it is to know how to get yourself into the right car, get the right deals done, manage yourself.
So there are people that are considered the best in the world but never won a world championship because exactly, yeah. of the car.
Yeah. Even never won a race. There's one guy what? Called Chris Amon. He's a New Zealand Kiwi. Uh-huh. Never won a single race.
But he was considered one of the
greatest. And he's considered one of the fastest.
How is he considered one of the fastest?
Well, because you know. You know you from outside. You can see what they can do in inferior cars.
Really?
Compared to the teammates that they have. So those are always kind of references.
Based on the other cars within
exactly.
the team.
Exactly. So you can always kind of judge what kind of level they're at. Okay. And so there's a lot of people who say...
imagine if he was in this car.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's different to you playing handball,
yeah.
where for your own performance, it just comes down to your own...
skill set. You have the ball, the same yeah. net. Yeah, exactly.
More simple. But in our case, we really depend on the technology that we're racing with, which is built by 1,500 employees per team. So my team had 1,500 people
up.
To build two racing cars
this
every year.
This is expensive.
Year. Yeah, $400 million budget.
For the cars?
No. So 90% of that was driver salaries.
Oh my god!
And then there's 10% left for building the cars.
I'm the wrong business. Just kidding.
That was just a joke.
No, it's good.
But the 400 million is accurate. Just the driver salary ratio. The 400 million per year per team is accurate.
For two cars.
For two
and
race
1,000 employees.
1,500 employees.
Traveling with it all and yeah. whatever it takes. To
yeah,
my
yeah.
gosh.
Of man. Course, the 1,000 employees don't. The 1,500 don't travel.
Right.
It's only about 90, I think.
Oh my gosh, man.
But it's huge. It's completely out of control. Yeah, massive.
Now, what was the biggest lesson that your dad taught you growing up?
He always said, you always meet twice in life. So when you do part ways because of an argument or whatever, remember you'll always meet that person again. So part ways, try to make it on good terms.
Interesting.
And that has given me so much.
So don't burn bridges.
No. And it's really, I think at least 5 times where it's fundamentally impacted the course of my life that I've listened to him and parted ways on good terms, because then a few years later, having that relationship not destroyed meant I could get back at something and it gave me a huge step in my life.
Did you ever destroy a relationship that actually came back to hurt you?
So I'm much more on the sensitive, not impulsive side. I always very rational thinking. So I will almost never do I react, go out of control. Or,
really?
Yeah.
That's good. It must be like a
You're a bit more on the other side.
You have to learn. I have to learn over the years of like making mistakes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, okay.
So one of your
don't
biggest...
text this thing back to this person. You know, I wish I could delete that text.
Yeah. Or don't knock this guy out because he pushed you in basketball.
Exactly. Don't get in fights anymore on the streets. Yeah. But you learn through mistakes, I think, for sure. So that was a great lesson from your dad. What did your mom teach you? What was the greatest lesson?
My mom to be humble. Stay humble. Yeah, and keep your feet on the ground and sure. always treat other people with respect.
Yeah,
I think that's the biggest lesson from her because she does that very well.
Yeah.
Not exactly her teaching me, but me seeing her do it. And I think that's a big one. And character-wise, I'm much more like my mom than my dad. So
that was humble.
That was a big lesson yeah. from her, yeah, which also just gave me a lot in life.
Mm-hmm.
Because going arrogant is not good. And it's a big, big problem. Especially for people who have success, they'll always just start to believe they're a god, you know?
Yeah, and then you treat people poorly and
exactly.
it's not good.
And it just backfires.
Yeah,
it will eventually.
It will.
Even though it can be successful for many, many years, one day it will backfire in a big way.
There's also no joy in that experience.
That's probably the biggest
it's
backfiring.
It's like you have this inner demon or battle that you're constantly facing where you think you're better than everyone. And that's challenging because it's very lonely if you live in that way.
Do you speak of experience?
I mean, I would think that like... I don't think I ever got to that place, but there's probably maybe moments where like a few days, maybe I felt like that. And after you win a bunch of games or make a bunch of money, I thought like, okay, whatever. But then I was quickly remembered like, no, just be grounded, be humble, be grateful. And so I don't think I've ever really gotten there. I think there's moments of reaction in situations where I've gotten there, but not consistently, if that makes sense.
So I struggle to understand those kind of feelings because I'm on the other side. I'm the lack of self-confidence. I'm more on that end, which again has its strengths and weaknesses. It has its weaknesses in that you're just very sensitive, mm-hmm. and a lot of fear comes in, and fear of failure and all these kind of things. But at the same time, fear is like a huge driver and to become a better person, to prepare better. And sensitivity also helps you learn, you know, and improve yourself because you're always questioning yourself. Mm-hmm. How can I do a little bit better? And the arrogant guy will always think it's the other guy's fault because
right.
I'm the best in the world.
Right. Or the car broke down or is this exactly. person's fault. Yeah.
And so there's really, it's a trade-off.
It's funny because whenever you watch someone do an interview after they win a game, right? Like a big football game or basketball, there's usually two different responses from when the interviewer goes, how did you do it? Congrats on the win. You see I'm the greatest in the world. I knew it was gonna happen. The Muhammad Ali, the Mayweather, the McGregor type of response. Like, I'm the greatest. I knew I was gonna win. Of course, this is simple. These guys are either Zlatan. I don't know if you watch soccer, but Zlatan's hilarious. Of course.
Have you had him on your podcast?
No, but I watched him lose last week in a playoff game against LAFC. And his response in the interview was just like, I made everyone here famous. I'm the greatest in the world. He's like, they lost. And he goes, epic. These guys wouldn't even be famous without me. You know, it's hilarious.
Epic.
And then there's the other response, which is, you know, all the praise goes to God or my team or to my coaches or, you know, we've just been so humble and working very hard. We're just following the process. It's a more grounded response.
Yeah.
And I think either way can work.
Yeah, but if I look at the vast majority, it tends towards that arrogant side.
Yeah.
Because it also, being in the public space and having so many people judging you every second of the way is such a burden. And I think having that little bit of arrogance and self-confidence just really gives you that a little bit more necessary strength, I think, in the long run to deal with such a crazy environment.
It does.
I think. And so if I look at the F1 drivers, most of the most successful ones will tend to be a little bit towards that, like very self-confident, a touch of arrogance, love for themselves, you know, that direction.
Do you feel like you need to have that in order to deal with the pressure, in order to feel like I am the greatest, I'm going to take those risks and do those things to make me win?
I think, as you said, there's not just one way, but I think in terms of the majority, it's a little bit towards that direction, which is probably the more successful, more potential character trait, I think. And also those guys usually have the glass half full rather than half empty, which also it just gives this little bit more stability and strength, I think. And if those guys then still question themselves, in some way they still manage to understand that they need to improve themselves all the time, which is Michael Schumacher, for example. Mm-hmm. He had this incredible self-confidence and self-love, but still worked his butt off and questioned himself and wanted to improve himself all the time. So that's the magic ingredient then, which is very rare, I think.
Yeah, I think when you're arrogant and you think you're the best in the world, you have blind spots where you're like, you don't think about the little minor things exactly. that maybe you need to improve. And therefore, when you start to hit your decline, because at some point you will decline, whether it's physically, emotionally, mentally, like at some point age will get the best of you.
At what point in sports?
At some point, right? In sport.
Is there some guideline from doctors or what?
No, I just think like you said, you know, 37, 38 is kind of like the older spectrum of the sport because it's just so physically demanding. So you're not going to be 60 probably and playing at a high performance.
How does Tom Brady do it? How the hell is that possible? That at the age of, you still have that hand-eye coordination. Is it experience that just overcomes?
I mean, he's so disciplined with his body where he's extending the quality of his health with everything that he does. I've met Tom a few times. I know a lot of people on his team. And he's not superhuman. He just is super intentional in what he does every single day. I mean, if you watch his college football.
He sucked.
Well, I mean, he wasn't an average. He wasn't an average. I mean, he was an elite quarterback in a Big Ten in a conference for Division I, right? So he's an elite quarterback, but based on the standards of like freaks of nature athletes, he wasn't like this incredible looking athlete. Wasn't fast, didn't have this amazing arm, but he has consistently been focused on his health, and his mind is so strong that I think his mind carries him through any challenge and adversity. And I think the mindset is the thing that a lot of people lose first. It's like when you start to doubt, like you were smart, you went out on top. You didn't say like, I'm gonna go try to like three-peat, go back to back, because when the mind is gone, I think it's hard. It doesn't matter what the body, if you're healthy or not. And you talk about insecurity, and did you feel like you lacked self-love?
Yeah, but I still do. Generally do.
Where does that come from if you lack self-love?
A lot is linked to the need for recognition from mm-hmm. others around, mm-hmm. whether it's friend or the public or whatever. I think a little bit above average need for that I have.
Why is that? Because you're a psychologist.
As long as I can think, really. Even as a young kid, so shy, could never even speak in front of other people in any way. Extreme shyness. So it's as long as I can think, really, that I have that. Then I don't know. Then I think about my parents and things, possibly because my father was traveling a lot. Maybe that adds a little bit to it. Because as I said, workaholic. So possibly
you didn't see him much.
But as much as I think of it, I cannot find a real evidence of it in my mind. It's just a possibility, because as we always say, the youth has such an impact, our early days. So I don't blame him or anything in any way.
Sure. But how do you think we develop self-belief and eliminate that insecurity? Is that possible?
I've tried so much.
Really?
It's so hard. So I did it. I helped myself with, first of all, I grow as, like, for example, I could never speak in front of my class.
I couldn't either.
And now I can speak in front of 1,000 people.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's okay. Like, sometimes I can even almost enjoy it.
Right. I could breathe a little bit. Yeah.
No, this is the most incredible transformation, because literally, even in front of 6 people, I could not
speak. That was me.
I wouldn't sleep the whole night before. It would be shaking. My whole mouth would be shaking standing in front of them. Wouldn't black out. Wouldn't be able to think anymore. Like, the greatest horror. And here is one of the biggest life lessons for me, which you know exactly about. It's you grow most when you push yourself into the discomfort. That's where you do the biggest growth.
Man.
You know? It's push yourself into the discomfort, push yourself into the suffering, push yourself into your fear, and that's where you grow most as a human being. And this I've learned so much from my life, and I've become really good at that now. Now I have the courage. I almost love pushing into that. Because I just know the results that it will bring for me. And not only growth, but growth also equals proud and happiness.
Mm-hmm.
That brings long-term happiness. When you know that you're growing as a human being, you're learning, you're making progress, you keep pushing into the discomfort. And so, so this is something I learned a lot from my life, which you did too.
That's my whole life. I feel like we're very similar. Where is the biggest insecurity now? I mean, you're a world champion. You were the best in the world at what you did, with 500 million people watching who all support you, love you, think you're amazing. How is there still an insecurity or a lack of belief or a lack of self-love in certain areas of your life? How is that even possible now?
It's still a bit of that glass half empty, I guess.
Really?
And me wanting to be a different human being than I am.
Uh-huh.
I would love to be more of a macho kind of person.
Why?
Because that's kind of seen as cooler from society. Those guys are seen as cool.
Says who?
Says society.
Okay.
But I'm saying this and I just know it's so dumb.
You're laughing.
It's so dumb. But it's the instinct, you know? Can't change it. I mean, I can, but it's the way it is. For example, that I would like to be in many respect different person than I am.
Mm-hmm. What's the discomfort that you need to lean into in order to overcome that?
Oh, man.
Like, what would it take if you said, I have a 1-year challenge, 2020 is a new decade coming, and I need to rid myself of insecurity and a lack of disbelief in myself for anything in my life? What would that challenge be for you, where you need to go all in and help yourself overcome it from from, again, being scared and trembling in front of six people like myself to being able to speak in front of 1,000, what would that experience be for you?
Oh man, that's a different, this is now you got me on the back foot there.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Because that's but that's a very difficult one. How do you, I think one powerful way would be to much better understand the suffering of the kind of person that I would actually prefer being in some way. So the suffering that is someone like, we spoke about Lance Armstrong just earlier. He is one of those guys who has this incredible like kind of self-confidence, arrogance and things like that. Always believing he's the best and greater than everybody else. And I think very powerful for me would be to better understand the suffering of those kind of people. Because they have just as much or even more suffering than others.
Yes. You mean the suffering of people that believe they're the best?
Yeah.
What's the suffering that they face?
Well, you can tell me because you're a bit on that direction.
The lack of,
to say that.
Well, for me, it would be the desire to always prove people wrong. I think there's a defense mechanism. When you're saying, I'm the best, this person can't touch me, I'm going to prove them wrong. There's like this protectiveness around your heart and your ego to need love, to need to have
a need for recognition.
Recognition, love, acceptance. Yeah. And it's just more extreme for some people. So my entire life, I was focused on proving everyone wrong because I was picked on and bullied and I was laughed at when I would speak in front of my class because I had a stutter, all these different things. So it was a need to, and so I wouldn't stand in front of my class and read aloud anymore because I was so terrified of being made fun of. And isn't it funny?
Like, you pussied out.
Yeah, exactly. And these memories shape our life, right? These moments, whether it be one or many moments, shape our life. And it did for me, multiple moments. And my whole goal of being a great athlete was to prove everyone wrong about me. To get self-love, but it was like, I wanted to hurt those people to say like their words were not validated. I'm going to go spend a decade, 2 decades to prove them wrong. I wasn't even thinking about it really like every day, but it was subconscious. And that was a driving force for me. But it left me feeling very lonely, very even more insecure, because if I didn't win, then I was nothing. So you always had to win or you're a loser. And that's scary because you will do whatever it takes to win. And I hurt myself a bunch. I got a lot of injuries. And I just wasn't smart. And again, I was more reactive because it was like no one wanted to be around me if I ever lost because I was just so angry. So I think there's a level of discomfort inside. There was no peace ever. And I think there's not much peace for people like that. And so that's why I feel like since the last 6 years, I've been doing so much work on myself. I said, what if I could live a life where I didn't have to win and be the best at everything, but I could have this sustainable energy, this more pure loving energy that I could achieve all my dreams and feel 100% fulfilled and really enjoy the process like we talked about, like the moments every single day. And it's been a complete game changer for me to flip that. Now I'm still working on it. I still get triggered and react in times, but that's, I think, the key. But for you, where's the validation? Like, where do you still feel like you need to feel validated?
It's just that general, all of us humans, we have it.
Yes.
This need for recognition.
Yes.
It's the whole tribal thing.
Yes.
That's why.
How much validation do we need? You have 500 million people that are like, you're a god, you're a legend, you're amazing.
I don't know. Do you need
the whole world?
Huh? I don't know. It's addictive, huh?
This
fame is like, it's a drug.
It is.
It's a proper addictive drug.
And if it starts to go down,
that's tough.
It's less.
That's tough.
You're like, am I not good enough
anymore? That's tough, exactly. So this, I mean, for all the sportsmen out there, and everybody's has it because the career ends and there's only one way after that. It's down. Doesn't matter how successful you are afterwards.
You're just living in the past.
Down, yeah.
I used to be good 10 years ago, right?
Exactly. And the problem is that for the people listening, for those who've never experienced being in such a public position where so many people are judging you, it's so difficult to understand, I think. To understand, because for all of us, we watch the Kardashians on TV and we want to be like them, many of us, yeah?
Right.
We want to be like them, we want to be famous, I must be just glitz and glam and money and just happiness and everybody looks up to you.
Yeah, right.
So it's a bit difficult to understand that no, in that position, money and fame might actually bring sometimes more suffering than when you don't have it. As long as you're above a certain threshold of income where you don't have to worry about paying your rent in 3 months and things like that. Of course, that's a big, big suffering, which many people have, which is more extreme than anything else, surely. But as once you get beyond that, if you cover your basic needs, I think you have a good chance of being happier than the people who are actually having millions and billions and are famous.
Where do you feel the most fulfilled in your life? When you're doing, thinking, being what?
The most fulfilled is when I, one example is when I progress as a human being. Mm-hmm. So for example, reading your book. Mm-hmm. Reading your book is fulfilling because you can always pick out a few things which are just, in the end, it's all the same because I've studied it for 10 years.
Of course.
But it's a little bit of a different angle again.
Yeah.
And then you think, and for 10 years I've thought, I know that. And then you give that small different angle. I'm like, shit, I didn't know anything.
Right.
I didn't know a single thing.
Yeah.
This is the way to go.
There you go.
So that's very fulfilling. And then fulfilling is doing good for other people.
Yeah.
The problem is, you have an awesome quote in your book, which is, rewards for good habits is growth, but poor habits have instant gratification.
Yeah, they do.
And so I'm always fighting against these instant gratification habits.
I want a cupcake right now. I want some sugary drink.
It's a disaster.
Drink,
right? It's an absolute fight every day of my life.
Yeah.
Because the short-term instant gratification just always pulls you in.
Feels so good.
And the more difficult good habits for long-term growth and happiness.
Yeah.
It just takes a lot of discipline.
You know, the more we can delay gratification, the happier we become, I think. Mm. It's like the small results every single day. Even sometimes you can't even see them, but just knowing you did something you said you were going to do, like being your word, being consistent to who you say you want to become is the most powerful long-term. It's just the hardest to do. But I think that's where the real, like, you learn more about yourself doing that than taking the easy way out.
Of course.
And that's what it's all about.
So my latest has been to try and get rid of
the
smartphone and switch to old school Nokia.
All in. For how long?
Completely. No. I'm doing this. My problem here is why I have the smartphone on the table again now is
in the US.
Because my old Nokia doesn't work in the US. I don't know what's going on there, but it can't cope with the latest 5G or whatever.
So you won't be able to do tech. You won't be able to do emails. You won't be able to scroll.
I'm a bit messed up now for these 2 days here. But then when I get back, it's back to the Nokia.
But you won't have like
it just does
Wi-Fi.
SMS and phone.
And
a new potential addiction, which is a Snake game. Remember that?
Yes. Oh my gosh. So that's your only game.
So first thing I did was go back on Snake game until my wife said, listen, you didn't switch to Nokia just to be on Snake game all day long.
Oh my gosh.
So stop that as well.
So how are you going to be managing social media or responding to people? Is it just going to be phone calls?
So, well, I still have my computer, for example.
Okay.
It's just building a bit of a barrier to entry.
That's smart.
So I still have my laptop.
So
but
work
it's more
is
difficult.
Work.
It's
yes.
more difficult to pull out the laptop all the time. So it's just creating this little bit of a distance.
That's smart.
So that's the way to do it. And again, from learnings. So one of the greatest learnings for why I then eventually became world champion was because I learned to simplify life. So even on my way to being a world champion, I never read a single piece of news, especially not the ones about me. Never read a single piece of news, never read a single email for the last 4 or 5 months on my way to becoming world champion. Just I chopped off everything, all the unnecessary rubbish that we all get into, all the, what did I call them, instant gratifications.
Yes.
I chopped everything off in my life. And there was just racing, the preparation for that, making myself like well-being as much as I could and the family. And that was it. There was nothing else. And that was just so powerful to give me the 2% more clarity of mind and potential when it mattered.
Do you think if you would have done that 5 years prior, that you would have been able to win a world championship if you would have eliminated distractions and instant gratifications?
I'm not sure.
That's
a difficult question.
Timing?
It's a difficult question. It was everything is perfect the way it is, you know, and it was the right timing to continuously grow and become a better human being whilst also becoming a better driver.
Yeah.
And then that year was perfect to take the title in that year and dominate the sport in that year was the right moment. Also, it's not easy to go. So it's because it's a bit extreme.
Very.
So it's always, I think, having everything in balance is the most important in life as well. Never just try and be the perfect simplified life and become a monk. That's not the way either.
Right.
It's the middle way. So little gratifications
here and
addictions here and there, and watching Netflix or whatever is fine, and it's in the balance that you need to find the right place. And I went extreme, so I chopped everything off.
But that's what made you world champ.
Yeah, I know, but in the long term, it's not really healthy. I don't think a healthy way to go. I did a lot of meditating as well. Mm-hmm. So I'll do like 45 minutes in the morning, 45 minutes in the evening.
It's amazing.
And short ones throughout the day, because the highest form of meditation is doing it all through the day. Yeah. It's this awareness that you get.
Constant awareness. Constant,
quick, bring yourself back all the time. That's the ultimate form of meditation.
Yeah.
You don't need to sit there for hours and hours.
Yeah.
Doing a lot of that as well.
Now, we were talking last night and I said, what would you think about during the races? And tell me your response of what you would actually think about.
I knew this was going to come up today. Yeah, because also one of my weaknesses, probably as a result of being this more on the sensitive side, is this lack of presence. And always in my worries and in my doubts and in my fears. And so then in the racing as well, you'd think that driving a car at 230 miles an hour in a city, you wouldn't have time to think of much else. but still, nevertheless, sometimes on the straights, there is time. Especially to think about fears of losing and fears of mainly fear of losing, really, yeah, and everything that comes with that. Sometimes also fear of getting hurt, of course, in this sport, but mainly the fear of losing. And so, yeah, lack of presence, which is something I tried to work on a lot, but it's so difficult, difficult to improve.
So how much percentage of time on the actual racetrack in a competition would you say you weren't focused on winning, but you were focused on worry, doubt, fear of losing, insecurities.
Oh, man, it's quite a big one.
What's the percentage?
It's quite a big percentage.
Like 80%?
Maybe 70.
So 70% of your time.
60? Shit, that doesn't sound good.
70% of your time.
Let me give hope to all the listeners, please.
Yes.
Even with that kind of doubt.
You still became the world champion.
And not believing that I could do it, I conquered the world and became world champion.
70% of the time you're doubting yourself. Living in
let's say 50. I don't know. Let's not make it too extreme.
Half the time. You're thinking. There might be a moment of worry.
And
right?
It depends on the situation as well. Huh? If there's a time in the race where I'm dominating, and which of course happened a lot, then that will sort
good.
Of
you're like,
you can feel good, and then it goes away. It's more in the times where you're not dominating, then immediately the self doubt will crop in.
So
everybody has it to some extent. Of course, it's completely natural.
Unless they're egomaniacs.
But then egomaniacs don't have ultimate success, because that's too extreme again.
Right.
So I think self-doubt is very, very healthy. It's a great driver. It's a great motivator as well. So everybody has it, all of us humans. Even the guys who seem so self-confident, sometimes they're the ones who have it most.
Yeah.
So dear listener, also remember that when you have someone in front of you who seems really self-confident, you can look behind the
most
eyes
insecure.
And behind the eyes, and often it's just covering the greater insecurity.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so this is a hope that even with self-doubt, you can win big.
What do you think is the key to eliminating self-doubt for yourself or for anyone? What are some simple things? Maybe it's not simple.
I tried so much. I tried visualization in the meditation.
Yeah.
I tried it so much, and difficult for me to find progress there. My biggest ones were preparation. That helped the most.
That helped you feel more confident.
Yeah. Preparation. Preparation equals confidence.
Mm-hmm.
So prepare the hell out of it. Like it's so extreme. Also the attention to details, because 10 details add up to a big step, and many people will be lazy to work on those details. So if you can do 10 big details, you'll get. And I have a nice example, which if you don't mind, I'll just throw it in quickly.
Yeah.
So weight in our sport is crucial, just as it is with ski jumpers or cyclists. Every gram counts. And there was a simulation measurement that 3/300ths per second per lap, so a lap time, which a 3/100ths per second difference, which is often the difference between first place and second place,
because
it's very close in our sport. So 3/100ths of a second was equal to 1 kilo of my body weight.
Oh my God.
So even though the car with me weighs 700 kilograms, which is 1,400 pounds, because we have such high G-forces, 2 pounds more is 3/100ths of a second per lap slower.
Slower, wow.
So it's very, very, like, very fine line. And therefore, every gram counted. And I really focused on the details. So I chopped my socks. I took the helmet paint off because it was 60 grams.
Shut up.
So I went from a colored helmet to a black helmet, because then it was just the bare carbon, because it was even 80 grams. So the socks were 5 grams each. The helmet was 80 grams. And it adds up. And it added up to 500 grams, everything I did. I also chopped my seat, because the seat is a carbon mold. So if you chop it in the places where you don't necessarily need the seat. Mm-hmm. You have, again, 10 grams here, 10 grams there, and you get another 80 grams. Okay, so I had 500 grams. So then I get to the summer break, and I'm behind in the championship. This is my last year. And so I'm thinking, what the hell can I do? This guy's a machine, my competitor, my opponent, Lewis Hamilton,
yes,
is an absolute machine. What the hell can I do to beat him? I need to find that little bit more. I was just a couple of points behind. And I'd lost against him the previous 2 years as well, or 3 years even. And so I'm thinking. And then I come to the conclusion, okay, I do a lot of cycling. So I've got these leg muscles. And leg muscles are some of the heaviest muscles in the body. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, summer break, 4 weeks, stop cycling. And I go on the treadmill and walk instead, uphill on the treadmill, so that I keep my fitness, but mm-hmm. I stop cycling. And I lost 500 grams. I measure myself all the time, and of course it's not perfectly accurate.
Sure, sure.
But I'm pretty sure it was more or less exactly 500 grams that I lost. So by now it's totaled 1 kilo that all the details have done. Now we get to qualifying right after summer break. The second race back is in Japan, or second or third race. Japan, my teammate is on pole, and the checkered flag is already out. I'm still out there finishing my lap. I cross the line, and I'm ahead by 0.02 seconds to snatch pole position away from him.
Shut up.
And that gets into his head. He freaks out, does some crazy shit, whatever. Messes up the start the next day. So he's like eighth after the start. I take an easy win. He manages to come back only to third place. And that gives me the biggest championship lead then on that day. And then I just had to carry it home in the next couple of races. So this is one example of just details that can result in such a massive difference at the end of the day for the whole life, actually. So
wow.
It all hinges
all
on
the details.
Tiny details sometimes. Yeah. So this is preparation. Preparation to give you more confidence. We could speak another hour, couldn't we?
So you pretty much grew up with Lewis, right?
Yep.
Racing all the time.
We were racing when we were 13 years old. We were both taken by a Mercedes-Benz McLaren. And they paid for our racing because we were the biggest talents in that age class. Yeah. So they paid for our racing, and it was just the two of us. And racing the world, world championships and everything. And in the greatest championship, we finished first and second. The only problem was that most of the time it was him finishing first, and I was finishing second. Because especially in go-karting, more than anywhere else, the natural talent counts.
Mm-hmm.
Because there you can't do so much with
the
engineering skills and technology.
Sure.
As a driver, it's more about pure driving because the car is so simple. So there, and the guy just has so much natural talent.
Really?
Off the charts. So always difficult.
What makes him naturally talented?
Oh, it's just the genes. It's the genes. And for driving, what you need is mainly hand-eye coordination is a big one.
Really?
Yeah. Hand-eye coordination and the speed of processing of your brain is a big one for us in our sport, because things happen so fast, and you have to process things like every hundredth of a second. You have new inputs, a new bump, a new feel, a new vision thing that you can see your car going. So it's really the speed of processing, which is so crucial. And for example, when we arrive at the end of the straight with 230 miles an hour, and then we break down to 50 miles an hour in the space of 80 meters.
Holy cow.
So in the space of, what the hell is that for a distance? 80 meters, how many yards? 180 yards? No, I don't know. Meters, yards?
It's almost the same, like 100 meters, 100 yards.
Oh, it's
like,
pretty similar.
It's like 110 yards.
Let's say it's 100 yards. So in 100 yards, we break from 230 miles an hour to 50 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So it's like hitting a wall.
Yeah.
And in that, and it takes maybe half a second. It takes maybe half a second or...
It's your speed and stop.
Yeah, it's just, you hit a wall. So if you would, you're a strong guy, but if you would jump in the car tomorrow, it would take your head off, I think. Your head would smack into the steering wheel because you'd not be able to hold it up. So we're very strong. We're very strong on the necks than the guys.
I went on a Navy jet in the G-force.
So they do 7G.
Yeah, I went.
And we do 6.
Holy cow.
But theirs is vertical. Ours is longitudinal.
Dude.
So it's very different.
Because
vertical just compresses you as a body, which is still like extreme. But having it laterally, I think, is even tougher for the body, because it's like pushing you, is trying to roll your head off.
It's going side to side. It's going to, I went 5G and I was like out.
Yeah.
I was so exhausted. It was like, I was exhausted.
Yeah. So we're doing 5-6G all the time.
Oh my gosh.
Every corner is five, in the faster corners.
You're a machine,
is 5-6G. So it's very, very extreme. And there, in that braking of like half a second in such an extreme deceleration, to still process all the time, you need to be on the limit. If you brake 1 yard too late, you're going to lock up and you're going to end up outside the track.
Yeah.
And if you break 3 yards too early, you lose easily one tenth of a second, which can be two positions on the grid. So it's that precision and the processing speed of the brain which really makes a difference.
What did that do for you mentally to have this guy you grew up with and always get second, you know, behind him? You're always like so close, but he's just a little bit ahead, like every year after year. How do you overcome that mentally?
Well, that's one of the biggest ones that just kills self-confidence. Even if I may have had it when I was young, thinking, okay, I'm a great racing driver. But then if you just constantly finish second, and also when I got to F1, because you depend a lot on your technology as well and on your car, mm-hmm. it took me 6 years to even win my first race. For six years, I didn't win not a single race. So 6 years of no winning at all, nothing. Finishing 10th, 12th, 15th.
Not even a podium.
7th. I had two podiums.
In six years. So how do you stay confident?
It's difficult. It's really difficult. Because everything is telling you and all the people around are telling you that you're just not good enough. They just care about results. They don't care about how or why or whatever. They just care about results. And so they just see the guys who are first. So they're all telling you that you're probably not good enough to be winning one day or world champion.
How did you stay in it for that long to go 6-7 years until you started to see some results at the highest level?
You can still, exactly as you always say, focus on doing the best that you can be. Mm-hmm. And you know yourself when you've done a really good job, even in an inferior car.
Right.
So that's where you pull your strength from. And the team will usually also know that they know where their car is compared to others. Gotcha. So if you do a great job that they know, okay, with a good car, you probably would have won today.
Wow.
So that helps. That's really important. In the team community, you get your rewards and recognition or whatever. So
like you did better than you should have done with
this
car.
Exactly. Okay. So that's okay. That's nice. And that really helps you keep confidence and keep pushing, keep being determined. And I also really believe strongly that the people who really push hard will be rewarded one day. Eventually, someday.
You just believe that, yeah. And
this is a belief that I really have.
That's good.
That if you keep pushing like hell, then one day, even if it's a long time, you will be rewarded, which happened to me. I pushed like hell for 11 years and got the massive, incredible reward at the end after 11 years. And every year along the way, I was always one step better in the championship as well. There was only two years where I was a small step back and then up again.
Yeah.
So 11th, 9th, 8th, 7th, 6th. Second, first.
That's great, man. And what was the biggest thought running through your mind within 10 minutes before the starting line of a big race?
Oh, man, it's a lot of, what is it? I mean, there's a lot of adrenaline, apprehension to what's ahead, concentration, and as well this usual fear of failure crap.
Gosh, man. Where do you think you'd be if you didn't fear failure?
Well, as I said, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
If you learn to appreciate it,
sure,
which is one of the biggest powers, learn to understand that failure is your greatest gift to grow.
It's a driver, yeah.
Yeah. So learn to appreciate it. Learn to even, you'll never like it, but learn to understand that it's not that bad. It's actually, this is your chance.
Yeah.
And this is also something that I visualize a lot and try to repeat to myself, that failure is the opportunity to become even better, even stronger, to grow. So that's an important one as well. And because without failure, you just stay the same.
That's
you never grow.
Yeah.
So you're stuck. So you've
got to fail to learn.
Exactly. You've got to fail. Yeah.
So why were you afraid of it? If you
because it sucks. The feeling sucks. It's horrible. How did it feel when you were losing in football?
It sucks. The worst. Handball. Well, USA is not that good in handball. So it's like, it's always a challenge.
Yeah, but less than losing as a team when you do a job yourself.
Oh, that's the worst.
And all your teammates have lost because of you.
That's the worst.
You had the shot in the last moment and you miss it, and you usually make that shot and you miss it. So it's you who's cost the whole team the loss. And we're a team as well in F1 because we have 1,500 people in the team. And all of them, their bonuses depend on my result on the track. So possibly even like the kind of gifts that they're going to be able to give their kids for Christmas. Depends on how I do on the track. So when we then as teammates take each other out from first and second place, because it was always us two battling for all the wins in the last years and in Team Mercedes in Formula One. So if we would then crash out and then end up in the wall or in the gravel trap with half a car left, causing damages of millions of dollars, and losing the result for the team, man, that was tough.
That's not good.
Internally as well, to manage that, whew,
that happened?
That's so hard.
Did that happen?
Yeah, it happened often.
Were both you guys crashed
a lot?
Yeah,
we crashed together.
No way.
Yeah. And that was tough.
That's why you don't talk as friends today. No, I'm just kidding.
No, we're okay. We're neutral. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Couple final questions. This one's called The Three Truths. So imagine it's your last day on Earth many years from now, and you've achieved everything you want to achieve. But for whatever reason, you've got to take your accomplishments with you. You've got to take your content, videos of you.
Very easy. I've got this one.
What would be your three lessons you'd leave behind?
I've got this one. No. Take an achievement with me.
No.
Not want to take an achievement with me.
You can't take it anywhere. You can take it all with you, but you have to leave three lessons behind, three truths that you would share with the world. They have no, and the world wouldn't have access to any content of yours anymore. So there's no more information. This interview isn't here anymore, but you get to leave behind three truths or three lessons to share with the world.
Yeah.
And that's all they would have to remember you by. What would be yours?
This is Jesus. You with your three truths. Yeah. I would say all of us are searching for more happiness in life. Yeah. So I think some of the greatest ingredients are, first of all, living a life of doing good for others,
mm-hmm.
and which I still have miles to go in my life to find my direction there, which also sucks, but it's not an easy process, but I know it's the right way. So I'm working on it. So that's one. Is that what you're asking, or is it different?
Three lessons that you would share behind. So doing good for others.
Yeah, doing good for others.
Yeah.
Never stop growing yourself. So learning for yourself and growing for yourself. I like the one that my dad said. You always meet twice in life.
Mm.
It's not really the best one that I could come up with, but it's one that I remember.
You always meet people twice.
Yeah, but I'd like to go into achievements. That would be even nicer now for me. So achievement, I would like to have achieved, to have inspired my kids to live a life of giving. Because this is something that I missed out on as a young kid. I grew up in Monaco, which is one of the richest places in the world. And it's like a kind of rich cocoon, you know? So I never experienced or got inspired by giving to others or helping others or doing something good for others.
It's all about just how much can we make and accumulate.
Yeah, not so extreme, but let's say neutral in that sense. Yeah. But no, because my upbringing was still like very respectful for money and very respectful for other people and all that. So that's all fine. It was still very good. But I missed the inspiration to help others. And that's a bit of a regret I have from my childhood. And I would really want to be remembered for inspiring my kids to live a life of giving. And it's so important for us parents to deliver these inspirations to our kids. Mm. You're going to have all that to look forward to.
Yeah.
Because I've learned from them as well now. I always thought that nature, so the genes, I thought that was the biggest part. But I've learned more and more now that as well, nurture plays more of a role than I thought. I have an example that I do cycling a lot. And so to do more quality time with my daughters, I've started to put them on the back seat on my racing bike.
Nice.
And then we just go off and stop in the villages, visit the church, and go for a prayer and just spend some quality time like that. And on the road, there's always a lot of plastic lying around. This is in Ibiza, a lot of garbage. And I'm always explaining her how bad that is for the environment, for our future and everything, and not thinking much of it. And she is now so gripped by this plastic being bad. So it's unbelievable. It's like become, she's four, huh? But it's become a passion of hers.
She's picking it up.
It's becoming a passion of hers. Like that she's saying, when we get a plate and cutlery when we're somewhere and it's in plastic, wrapped in plastic or something, she's like, no, daddy, this is really not good.
That's great.
We shouldn't be, and she's 4 years old. And so here I've seen the power of inspiration and then bringing them these inspirational stories and acquainting them to that. And I want to do that as well for in terms of helping others, which I'm trying to explore how to do it now. But I think that's going to be really, really fundamental. I hope I can do a good job with that.
That's good, man.
Yeah.
That's powerful. That's a great legacy to leave behind.
Yeah.
What's something you're excited about right now? You've got your own show that you're doing. You've got your YouTube channel.
Yep. I'm excited
about your annual event.
Yeah, I'm excited about the freedom that I have after sport, because sport is, it takes over your life, which is good at the time, but it's fine as well when it's over.
Yeah.
It dominates the life completely, you know, everything. So I'm really loving this this new freedom, mm-hmm. And going for these projects where I know that I can do good and have impact. So I wish to do it. You're an inspiration for me as well with the way you've gone with your podcast.
Thanks.
Because it just gives so much value to people listening.
Yeah, yeah.
And I hope we managed to extract some today as well. And that's, I think, so cool. So cool. Then receiving emails, you know, and I had a mom writing me the other day and from listening to a podcast.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, you've inspired me so much in how I'm going to handle my son, who's 6, because I happen to speak about mm-hmm. parenting as well in another podcast of mine. And so that's wonderful. So yeah. it's these projects where I do good, which I love trying to do. And I have a huge, I'm very much into green technology to preserve our planet.
Yeah.
So I'm really focusing on that. And I've built a whole festival around that. It's like a consumer electronics show like
What's
we have in
called?
Vegas.
Yeah.
And it's called the Green Tech Festival. It's in Berlin. And we had 35,000 visitors last year already.
It's
in
amazing.
The first year.
It's crazy.
So it was a big, big success. And so this is also something that I'm really passionate about because it's really doing good for our future. Such a topic, such an important topic at the mm-hmm. moment, the environment, as we know, although some of you will have that disagree maybe in some ways. but anyways, for me, it's an important topic. So those are the kind of projects I love at the moment.
Where can we find all this information? Where's the best website for you and social media? Where do you hang out the most?
Yeah, so this is not good either because it's a work in progress, this whole setting up. As you know,
sure.
It's very difficult. So I would probably say check out Beyond Victory, which is my podcast.
It's a great name.
So Beyond Victory or Nico Rosberg. You say great name. Yeah, I don't know. I wish to give the name more depth somehow. So I'm about to change it.
You can always change it.
Because it doesn't say enough.
What like, do you want
your,
to
your,
say?
Yours, like, you've absolutely nailed it. Like your name is the best in the world.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
So
what do you want it to say?
I want to say that my podcast is not about blah, blah, blah. It's about trying to extract life lessons and valuable lessons from the guests and hopefully being able to add some of mine as well along the way. And that's what I want the title to say as well. So inspiration, for example, or things like that.
Beyond Victory is cool. I think it's cool.
Yeah, but I want it to be more clear.
Yeah.
Because the problem is also me being an ex-driver, people don't necessarily immediately associate me with producing value for them.
Mm.
They think I'm just going to talk about racing or whatever, blah, 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 like a journalist or whatever.
Right.
But I would like to express already in the title that it's really about personal development, self-help, that whole direction, because that's what I'm passionate about.
Driven for growth, something like that. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Driven for success, yeah.
No, it's not easy. It's not easy.
Yeah.
You've stolen the one word that makes sense.
Greatness.
There's no other word.
Yeah.
There's excellence, which doesn't really work.
There's inspiration, there's success, there's greatness.
Yeah, it's greatness.
Yeah. I bought greatness.com also. I'm looking to develop it out. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. So there's Beyond Victory is the podcast, and then where you're also going to have your episode the other way around, me interviewing you.
So
you
on,
can go check that out.
It's on Apple. It's on
it's
Spotify.
All the, platforms. Yeah,
and
all
on
the
YouTube
platforms.
Also, right?
Yes, yes. So YouTube.
Okay.
It's for me. Podcast is working best on YouTube at the moment.
Really, that's
more
good.
More than audio.
That's good.
Yeah,
it's good.
Which is fun. And then greentechfestival.com.
Okay.
Is my festival in Berlin, and we're planning to go to the States as well in the future, possibly even as of next year.
Amazing.
Maybe New York.
Let's do it, man. I want to come visit. Coming to Monaco. Cool. Are you in Ibiza or Monaco? Where's
Monaco most of the time.
Okay, I got to come sometime.
Yeah.
And I'll come to the event someday. Before I ask the final question, I want to acknowledge you, Nico, for your vulnerability with talking about this, because I don't know very many world champions who talk about their fears and insecurities like you do so openly. And I don't know if you've been like this your whole life.
No. No, because it's scary to
very
talk
scary.
About, to talk about
very scary.
Those kind of perceived possible
Absolutely.
Weaknesses.
Absolutely.
And especially in our sports, it's a sport of machos.
Uh-huh.
If you have a psychologist working with you, he's called brain doctor, you know, like
right.
you're a loser. If you have, if you work with a sports psychologist, you're an absolute loser in our sport, as
right.
in the world.
It's
a topic which people don't really
right.
understand the power of it.
Well, I think you got an amazing heart, man. And I really acknowledge you for your ability to open up and talk about these things. Because I think if younger people can see that, hey, a world champion, he's insecure. He goes through his doubts and fears of failure too, even 70% of the time while he's racing.
50, I changed it.
50%. I just think it gives a lot of people inspiration, hope, and knowing that, hey, it's okay if I feel this. I can still do something great in my life. I don't need to rid myself
exactly.
of everything.
That's awesome, yeah.
And I think it's really great that you shared that. So thank you, man. Final question is, what's your definition of greatness?
That's a hard one again. Definition of greatness, it's definitely not it's not success.
Mm-hmm.
It's on a personal level, how much happiness you've found and fulfillment. And then that goes hand in hand with how much happiness you've given the people close around you, mm-hmm. so your family, your friends, and how much good you've done for them. And then even beyond that, if you have the chance to do good for even more people on a larger scale, I think that's very, very obviously greatness. And nothing, not more than that. It's not a result, mm-hmm. or it's not a championship that you win. It's really much more there. Which is difficult because we all think it's the championship.
The results, yeah. So I love, that's very, my answer too. Love
it's very, very difficult.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank
Powerful,
you to all you listeners
yes.
for tuning in. I hope you enjoy all the remaining episodes that you're going to go live with.
Yes. Thanks, brother.
What a good episode. I love this. I love having champions on. Champions who dedicate their life to becoming number one in the world and overcoming all the adversity, the challenges, the odds, the competitors, the rivals, everything. It's just something special about champions. They have a way of being. They have a way of thinking that is different. And it's like an obsession to be a champion. I just love meeting and hanging out with champions, and I loved hanging out with Nico. Got to spend some quality time with him, and just a talented, smart, kind, and caring and human being who wants to learn, who wants to continue to grow after becoming the champ. And I thought that was really cool. Hey, listen up real quick. If you want to connect with me more, I'm doing something special. Every week I send out weekly inspirational messages through my texting community. And so if you want to connect with me on a more personal level, I try to get back to as many texts as possible. There's thousands that come through, so I don't get back to everyone, but I try my best. But I'm sending out these audio notes, these messages, little videos, things that I don't post anywhere online. So shoot me a text right now, 614-350-3960. Just text me the word greatness, and I'll know you came from this. So the number you can text is 614-350-3960 and text the word greatness so I know you came from the podcast. Again, big thank you to our everyone who showed up and listened today. I appreciate you for being here. If this is your first time, click the subscribe button on the Apple Podcast and leave me a review. I'd love to hear what you thought about this episode and become a fan of the podcast. We've got a massive movement, over 150 million downloads of the podcast, and I feel like we're just getting started. So subscribe and share this with a friend. If you have a friend who loves Formula One, who loves Nico, who loves champions, who loves sports, and just wants to learn more about this, then share with a friend on social media. Tag me, tag Nico. I'm sure he'd love to hear from you. Send a text message to a friend. Whatever you got to do, get the message of greatness out there. You can really inspire someone else in your life today by sending them this link over on Apple Podcast. And a big thank you. Again, text me. Connect with me on social media. Subscribe to the podcast. We are just getting started. The year is almost over, but we are going to start a new decade. Dalai Lama said, with the realization of one's own potential and self-confidence in one's ability, one can build a better world. You don't make this place better by being insecure. You don't inspire other people by having self-doubt. You don't help humanity by being scared and afraid. It's your duty and your responsibility to overcome the challenges, the insecurities, and fears of your life, not to resist them or back down from them. Your life will become better when you start to overcome and chip away at those fears one day at a time, just by diving in, doing the thing that scares you. I know it's scary. Trust me, I lived for a couple decades of my life living in fear, crippled by a few different things, until I said, enough is enough. No more am I going to allow this silly little insecurity, this silly self-doubt to hold me back from being a confident human being. No more. This is the end. Tell yourself, I'm done. I'm sick and tired of this crap. I don't want to live in fear anymore. I don't want the opinions and judgments of other people to hold me back anymore. I'm not going to care what people think if I mess up and I screw up and I make mistakes and I look silly. Stop worrying about these things. This is a new year and a new decade coming to you. It's time to step up into your greatness because that's what you were born to do. I love you so very much. I hope you know that. I hope you feel that. We are just getting started together. We're about to hit 7-year journey on the School of Greatness podcast in the next month. And I want to go even bigger over the next 7 years with you. But I need your support. Make sure to share this with friends. Continue to connect with me online and let me know how I can serve you the best. I love you so very much. And you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.